Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Reality Reno with Mitch and Mark.
Mitchie, we have had another very busy week.
We absolutely did, Mark. We the shop, Mitch and Mark Home in Newport, is buzzing along with the online store. Christmas is coming. It's getting hectic.
You can feel it, can't you? But we also did a red carpet event this week, which is such fun to get dressed up.
We went to see Jagged Little Pill with the amazing, talented Nat Bassingthwaite. That show, if you want to get to the theatre, as we all do, it's been so long, we could not recommend more. It is brilliant.
It's brilliant, but another amazing meeting.
We got to meet the Wiggles, and we wiggled with the Wiggles. Oh, my God, Mark, aren't they the most beautiful humans?
They are. Who doesn't love a wiggle? But, Mitchie, iconic Australian performers, the Wiggles, another iconic Australian performer.
Delta Goodrum. Delta Goodrum had her Christmas concert, and we were lucky enough to be there with other friends, Georgia from Ronnie and Georgia. We had Kirsty and Jesse, also from the block, and our beautiful friend, Jules Robinson. So we had a ball, and Delta, you were absolutely amazing. Thank you so much.
She is. And Jules, doesn't she look amazing? She looks incredible. But Mitchie, another icon, Tom Berlinson, the man from Snowy River, his swing concert. We went to that. We had a big, big week of concerts.
Yeah, Tom Berlinson is an Australian through and through. He is history in Australian acting. Man from Snowy River and Farlap, where I saw the premiere of that one 100 years ago.
Didn't somebody mistake you for Tom Berlinson?
They did. They did. And I ran with it and went to the after party as Tom Berlinson.
You went. Yeah, you pretended you were Tom Berlinson. Anyway, we have got so much going on and we're all powering on to Christmas.
But we also had some really great emails from you, and we really appreciate that. And we want to hear more from you, not only about what you've heard, but also about what you'd like to hear. So if you're after any particular people you'd like us to interview or to have a chat with,
email us at inquiries@mitchandmark.com. This week, though, Mitch, we sit and talk to somebody who's become a good friend of ours.
Damien Cooley. Now, Damien Cooley, if you don't know that name, you should if you're interested in the property market. He is Mr. Auctioneer himself. We first met Damien attending auctions around the eastern suburbs, but beyond that, he represented us in our blockhouse. So Damien is just marked without a doubt the premier auctioneer in the country.
He is. And during our conversation, Damien also talks about how he and his gorgeous wife, Peppy, are now starting to live off the grid. They've been used to living in the city, but they've moved. They're trying to be sustainable.
And he also talks about how that's changed their life, getting back to grassroots and understanding more about life. But he also gives us some amazing tips as people attending auctions. If you're looking for your dream home, listen up, take notes, because this interview is just spectacular for getting information about dealing with auctions.
So we hope you enjoy the amazing Damien Cooley.
Hey, bud, thank you so much for joining us today. We have got a million questions for you.
Because you were our auctioneer in 2019 and you're one of the best known auctioneers in the country.
Yes, thank you. And what a great auction it was. It's been great to be in the industry for a long time and conducting as many auctions as I conduct. I guess the benefit for me is that I get to see so many different situations and scenarios, and it's been a really exciting career, a fun journey.
Well, mate, and actually, I'd like to start there, actually, start where it all began, because you went into an auction competition.
Yeah, yeah. You went in and you won an auction competition
at a very young age with no experience.
Yep. Absolutely zero experience. I first actually went to university for 1 week and I threw the towel in, and I remember going home and saying to my mum and dad, I'm getting into real estate. And dad was actually a conveyancing lawyer. So it was a shock to them because I was doing law at university and did really well in my HSC and whatnot. But yeah, I had a thing. I wanted to get into real estate, and that's the journey I took. So yeah, in April 1999, I got into property management.
So look at 18?
19 years old. So I started off in leasing, then into property management, and then I went into an auction competition. And I did really well. The auction competition was the Real Estate Institute of New South Wales novice auctioneer's comp. I won that. And then I went in the state final and I won that. And that's where it all began.
So you went to university originally to study law. Why did you go to do law? But then how come that changed? I mean,
in a week
to go, bang, I'm doing something different.
Dad was a lawyer. My brother's a lawyer. Law was in the family. And for me, being at university was just felt like I was back at school again. And I just decided this isn't for me. And I always had a love for real estate and I had a love for watching auctioneers. You know, I grew up walking around the streets of Rosebery, watching property auctions, on-site auctions, going to with my mum and dad and just seeing auctioneers. And I always loved that. And then when I got into real estate, watching the auctioneers whilst I was in the industry was really exciting. And I felt this is maybe something that I should throw my hat in the ring and give a go. And the auction competition for me was the catalyst for wanting to progress a career as an auctioneer. And yeah, I mean, I started my business in 2001. So yeah. I was 21 years old when I started my company. And it was actually called ResCom Auction Services at the time. We've just rebranded this year to now being Cooley. So I feel like people know that when they see the orange tie, they know that we're auctioneers and we're not technically real estate agents.
But Damien, to get there, you went into an auction competition. Was it about the thrill of the chase, the thrill of the win, or was it being on stage?
I really enjoyed getting up in front of a crowd. Certainly not a shy person. Being successful in real estate, you know, that is a quality that you really need to have. For me, the property side of it and the capital growth side of it and the excitement of controlling that crowd, it was very much all the different points that I really loved. I remember my dad sold my nan's house when Nan passed away, and I'll never forget that Dad set a reserve at $750,000. It's a 600 square meter block, Californian bungalow. You may remember we had a huge hailstorm rip through Sydney back in 1999. As a result of that, we had new roof, new ceilings, new carpet, new paint through the property. It was a very classic Kensington home. And $750,000 was the reserve. And I remember when it sold for $815,000. And at the time, that was huge money.
Yes.
And everyone was walking away saying, that buyer's a lunatic, absolute lunatic for paying $815,000. You know, that same house today is probably $3.5 to $4 million. But to me, that $750,000 to $815,000 was the exciting part about, wow, I've always been a believer that you need to make money while you sleep. And property investment is a way that you can make money while you sleep. And that's what I really love about the property industry. Is about investing in the industry, being able to add value to a property where others thought value couldn't be added, and being able to essentially turn your $1 into $1.50 or into $2 and get the best out of the asset.
Well, it's funny for us because our style with property has been buying places that are run down, renovating, and then delivering them back to market with the intent to make a profit. But the best profit we would ever make would be this place we're living in Newport, where we bought it pre-COVID. And then, like everybody else who happened to have a foot in the door, boom, the market just took
off. I know, we didn't see that coming.
No, I don't think anyone did, Mark. I don't think anyone did.
I didn't expect with COVID that we would see growth like this.
No, well, no one did. I mean, banks were forecasting, economists that are much more educated in financial markets and, you know, I guess the result of the COVID scenario better than me. And there was a lot of people reporting, you know, 20 to 30% falls. There was a lot of fear in the property market, a lot of fear in buyers. And I think that's the biggest difference between, you know, the initial lockdown period and the way that online auctions played out and the way the real estate market played out to the current period that we're in right now. What has just been unbelievable is the pent-up demand that people are literally sitting in their living rooms saying, my house is too small, we need an extra bedroom, we don't have a home office, we've always wanted to buy that country farm, we've always wanted to buy that coastal retreat, I really want to live along the eastern seaboard of Australia, or I'd really love to go and buy that property on the beaches in Perth. You know, these are the conversations that are happening at the dining room tables and the living rooms right now. And what we learned after that initial lockdown period is that once we got over the fear of big declines and everyone losing a lot of money, you know, the government really stepped in with JobKeeper. The government really stepped in helping businesses. So there's a lot of cash injected into the economy, and that pent up demand, people wanting to move, cash injection, low interest rates are all the contributing factors that led to, you know, arguably one of the biggest property booms we've ever seen.
Do you see it continuing?
I would think it would be hard to see it booming as strongly as it did, but I do believe that we're going to see good growth coming out of this lockdown period. While ever interest rates are incredibly low, and we're not seeing a sharp rise in interest rates anytime soon, and there's a lot of people saying we're not going to see any rise in interest rates for a little while, there's a lot of people who are wanting to move. And any lockdown periods where people are, I guess, forced to stay in their home, they're forced to really look around and say, well, what can we do to improve our home? What can we do to get an extra bedroom? If we can't do that, well, we need to sell and we need to move. And people will always need to buy, sell, whether it's, you know, births, deaths, marriages, divorces, kids growing up, people downsizing, people upsizing. There is always a need to buy and sell real estate. But what we will see, I think, for quite some time is that our market will continue to grow.
And do you think it will be a gradual wind down, or do you think it will stop with a thud when it stops?
After a significant boom, it usually tapers off pretty quickly. I do remember back in 2003 when I actually first became an auctioneer. That was really the end of the Sydney boom at that time. And I know that at that point in time, it did come off relatively quickly. We've seen other things like global financial crisis, top-end real estate come back quite sharply. That is one of the markets right now that is absolutely on fire. Top end of the market is just booming right now in Sydney. A lot of people are sitting back and going, far out, where are these people getting the money from?
Yeah.
Remember that there have been a lot of expats that have returned to Australia that were living overseas, that have done very well in their businesses overseas, that have a lot of money and cashed up, ready to buy. And that has been one of the buyer pools that has really driven the top end.
What's the value? Like, is it 2 million up? Is it 5 million yeah. up? Is it 1 million up?
Probably more around the, you know, 10 million and up. I would also say that, you know, you can talk about top end real estate really in any suburb, wherever you are. There's always a top and there's a bottom. But as people talk about top end real estate, it usually is, you know, a significant amount. And there are properties trading in Sydney now for over $100 million. So, you know, these are trophy homes, big sites, and incredible views.
It's funny, Damien, there was a time in life where, I need more of your motivation, but I actually did look towards being a very wealthy person. Now, when you mentioned top end starting at $10 million, I know that we will never, ever, ever need to worry about that. Sad, hey?
It's a burden we don't have to carry. I'm interested too, Damien, with what's happening with the market, and you see this across so many auctions that your team does. Are there areas that are booming? But does that mean there are areas like, you know, high density living areas? I'm thinking Sydney City, CBD or Melbourne, where people are wanting to get out of that. And is that pushing prices down there?
CBD has been a challenge. Yep. I think the biggest thing that's driven those high density markets right now that have been struggling, frankly, since COVID, is because a lot of the overseas students, for example, like take Kingsford, yes, or take Sydney CBD as an example, apartments in those areas, rents have dropped, you know, anywhere up to 30-40%. And when rents drop significantly, it means the investors are out of the market, prices come back. So that is one area of the market that has been challenged. And the CBD has obviously been heavily driven by holidaymakers, people wanting to have a home in the CBD, a big Asian community within and around Sydney CBD. The biggest and strongest market has been house market and the downsizer market. Downsized market is unbelievable.
So on a very selfish note, we have an apartment in Potts Point, which is in the Rex building, which is currently empty. Should we hang
sell
on
or
to
keep?
It? Or yes, sell or keep?
Well, I'd be saying it depends on what you're going to be doing with that money. So when someone ever asks me, you know, should I sell something? My response to that is, well, what's the next move? Because if you're going to sell that asset that you for example, can't add any more value to? Are you going to be taking money out of that asset and putting it into something else, which is going to be an asset that is going to grow in capital growth? And is your return going to be greater in the asset that you want to buy rather than the asset you already have? So that's really the question that you need to ask yourselves. I don't believe in selling just to sell. Just because the market's good, I don't believe in selling. I believe if you're going to sell to get rid of some debt and that's going to make your quality of life better, then I'd say sell. If you're going to sell to take the money out of that asset and buy, you know, a house in the Central Coast, for example, you know, I think that's a market that is doing unbelievably well and will continue to grow. South Coast, rural markets, Southern Highlands, Hunter Valley, you know, these are markets that are doing very, very well. And frankly, almost outperforming Sydney, because people have been in this period wanting to get out of where they are now, and they want to buy that property that they can escape Sydney or escape Melbourne or escape Brisbane CBD. Lifestyle assets have done very, very well in the last 18 months.
So I have a question, and it's just me thinking about what are the long-term kind of ripple effects of this change in behaviour for people. At some point, are those markets like CBD or Kingsford, are they opportunities for people if they're looking at wanting to get into a market, but it might be a longer-term strategy? Like, you know, if those prices go down or investors get out, are they opportunities in?
Yeah, there are. There are opportunities there. I think right now that a lot of the people who are looking at potentially buying in those areas are certainly doing a lot better than they would have otherwise have done. So they're winning on the purchase front. The big question is when will borders open and when will people come back from overseas that will be able to rent these places? We need the immigration to be able to really fill all these properties that Australia has right now. And I know that there is a shortage of property and whatnot, but still, at the end of the day, that's what drives the rental market up. Challenge, I think, for any investor is that prices are so strong, interest rates are so low, the return that you're getting in terms of a yield right now is not unbelievable, but everyone's looking at the capital growth play. When the borders do open, people are able to go on holidays and they're able to go to Europe, for example, for a month. Are they going to still want to be going to the house they bought on the Central Coast? They're still going to want to be going to that other property.
But Damien, on the Southern Highlands and the city, so you live in North Shore of Sydney,
yep.
Or in the Southern Highlands, but now you split your life between both.
Yep.
How does that work where you've got a young family?
You know, for us, the farm has been just an unbelievable thing for our family. It's been an incredible switch off. We come down ordinarily on a Saturday evening after auctions, and Pep and the kids will usually come down around in the morning or around lunchtime, depending on school sport. They'll get down here early afternoon, ride the horses. I usually get down Saturday evening, depending on what time my last auction is. It's a two-hour drive from door to door from my house in Sydney to our property, and then we stay Saturday night. We spend all day Sunday. We have dinner Sunday night at the farm, and then everyone showers, changes, throws on their PJs, and we drive back to Sydney. So it is hard in some respects, but very rewarding. And the kids being able to do all these things that they wouldn't have otherwise have been able to do, ride horses, ride motorbikes, have campfires, make damper, have billy tea, to be able to do that stuff is just really incredible.
Has it changed the kids having this country experience?
Absolutely. It's changed the kids. It's changed Pep and I. I think we're a much closer family having this place, this getaway to be able to get to. And also think that it really opens the kids' minds to really thinking about other things outside of technology, other things outside of, you know, roaming the streets of Sydney. And down here, we've got, you know, 180 acres where they can really enjoy themselves.
Yeah, I think maybe that's something that's come out of COVID, that we were locked in our homes and then had to work out how we function as families. And the kids automatically just went to their iPads. I think parents thought, well, for the first little bit, that was okay. But they had to really think about what the values were and how they could get more out of life for the kids. They can't just be focused on an iPad the whole time. They'll cut off from their friends. It absolutely inspired us to move out of the city, but I think not everyone did. But maybe we got to learn more about nature.
It's the ripple effect. It's bizarrely the maybe the unanticipated impact of something. I often like to talk to people, it's like you put a drop of pebble in a pond and the ripples go out. Sometimes you don't know the impact, but these are positive impacts, I think.
I think any family that is considering a move is certainly considering it right now. And we're seeing a lot of people like moving out of major capital cities, one because of affordability, and two for lifestyle. But you like you can go down to some of these areas outside of major capital cities and buy a property at, you know, a quarter of the price at what you'd have to pay for that same home in the major capital cities, or half the price. And so affordability plays a big role. And the positive byproduct of that in many respects is actually a better quality of life. Everyone's goals are different. And I think, you know, it really comes back to what are your goals? What do you want to achieve as a family?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So now having two properties, your city property and your country property, there must be work you've had to do on these homes. So what have you done, Damien? Have you renovated?
Yep, done a number of renovations. I wouldn't say I'm a good renovator, Mitch, because I've got expensive taste.
Yeah.
We've renovated a few properties. We bought a property in a suburb called Narromburn on the Lower North Shore. And we bought that, and then we lived in it for, I think, about 2 years whilst we got a DA and whilst we kind of worked out what we wanted to do with the home. And it was when we bought that, it was unrenovated, but it was what we could afford. So we decided to buy it. That was what we could afford to buy. So we kind of roughed it for a couple of years while we saved up a bit more money. And then we renovated that property. We did end up selling that property in order to move into to buy the next family home. So we then bought in a suburb called Artarmon. And we did the same thing. We lived in that for, I think, about a couple of years whilst we got a DA through and whilst we worked out what we wanted to build. And that was a significant renovation on that home. And we virtually left the front two rooms standing and knocked everything of the back off. And then we just did, you know, an unbelievable five-bedroom family home.
Is there a renovation plan for the house on the farm?
We've been doing a lot of renovating in paddocks and down the driveway. We've got 1 kilometre of driveway. So that's going to be all timber fencing the whole way up. We're going to have a tree-lined driveway. And then the home, we actually just got our garden design the other day, last week. One of my mates, a guy called Anthony Wire, from Wire & Co. in Sydney, does our garden design. He designed our garden in Artarmon, and they literally just sent us the garden design for the farm, and it's unbelievable. And we had our architects, Mark Oxenham from Castle Peak, did the architectural drawings for our little home here. We don't want a big house on the farm. We're happy for it to be a smaller home. For example, we don't have a TV. We actually got hot water the other day. You'd be excited to know.
Have you been going down there without hot water?
Well, we're totally off grid. So oh, wow. No water, no power.
Wow. Yeah.
So we just installed a unbelievable solar system.
Yeah.
And that solar system now powers the whole house, the shed, does everything. So we don't pay council rates. We don't pay water rates. All the water that we get comes from the sky, and that's what we drink. And we have a lot of natural springs on our property. And the natural springs is what feeds through to the cattle troughs and into the dams. So, you know, we're very big on, you know, use what we have and do what we can to preserve the ground. We've done a lot of work to the property. So we're doing all those little things to improve the capital value of the property. And obviously to improve quality of life. I will say, you know, the biggest driver of the capital growth really is the market. And I've always been a big believer is you really make your money, well, you make the significant portion of the money in the buy. And it all comes back to what you pay for something.
I'm glad you said that, because when we first started to look at property, I remember somebody said that to me and I knew nothing about property. And they went, you make your money when you buy it. And my brain was a bit, oh, I didn't quite get that. But I get it now. It's the purchase, what you do. And I guess it's driven some of why we bought certain properties, because we knew we could do something to them. We knew we could improve them. We could create or manufacture some growth in that property. And it was one of the reasons, yep, we kept away from things like Art Deco buildings in Potts Point, because everyone loves them. You know, it's too many people wanting to buy, yep, them, but we could buy something that was maybe a 70s or 80s build and make it look fantastic.
The only thing in saying that, though, Damien, that theory works generally, but we have a theory of you've got to look at what are the apologies that are making the property cheap or making it less than the, yes, other properties. And are there any of those apologies you can't overcome? Like the property we did in Bondi, it was absolutely in a terrible state. So we saw that as our big opportunity to get good capital growth, but it was in a bit of a valley. It was below street level. It had a damp issue you couldn't get rid of. We could present it right, but because it was in the valley, below street level, that was a hurdle we couldn't fix. So that apology, no matter how beautiful we made that little apartment, it wasn't going to get the capital growth. So I suppose for us, the learning is make sure that you can overcome the apologies.
Really, really good point. There are some key things that I always look for in buying an investment property. And the things that actually has no relationship with the location in terms of the suburb that you're buying in, or about the aspect, and that the way it faces can't change its aspect. And the aspect is a really important part, because people fall in love with this, a property with the right aspect straight away. And then if you are buying in certain locations, then look for a location that has a good rental yield. Look for locations that are, you know, well tenanted. I'm a bit of a buy and hold person, and I don't like to sell unless I need to.
I'm interested, you know, you were talking about auction, and I find the psychology of auction, and as an auctioneer, you're talking about as a kid, the excitement, you would go with what your mum and dad, you'd see the excitement. So there was something driving, you know, the psychology for you as an individual to want to be engaged in that career. Because it's not a career a lot of people would go to school and career counsellors say, what do you want to be when you grow up? Auction is not necessarily first on the list. But at the same time, the other side of that is, as an auctioneer, you're dealing with the psychology of people in a room. Can you talk to me about that? Because whilst you can talk about all the research, a lot of what happens with property buying and selling is about what's going on psychologically for people, what their needs are, what drives them.
Yeah. So you touch on a really, really good point, Mark, that for me personally, a lot of people say you need to inspect the property, you need to walk through the property, you need to feel it. How can you possibly sell something that you haven't seen? It actually has not much to do with the property at all for me. It has everything to do with the property for the buyer. I don't need to fall in love with the property. I need to find out what the buyer's prepared to pay and get as much as I can out of that buyer. That's my job. So my role as auctioneer is to understand the psychology of the buyer that's fallen in love with the property and get the best out of them. That's what I love. That's what I'm passionate about, is being able to work a crowd, working out who's going to be the potential purchasers, how much I can draw on their heartstrings to get the best result for the owner. You know, and I make no apology that that's what I do. Sometimes it can seem a little bit hard, because in my own mind, I almost know who the buyer is going to be, or I get a feeling who the buyer is going to be. But my job is to keep that underbidder bidding. And when I think that underbidder is getting towards the end of their limit, I suppose, my role is to then get that highest bidder to get the best out of them. So in a lot of times towards the latter stages of an auction, when I feel like my underbidder is really about to stop, I start trying to give the highest bidder confidence that they should be going for a much higher bid. If you just bid one more thousand, you're probably going to own this. But what I need 50, now you need to bid 20, because I don't think the other bidder is going to bid again. So as an auctioneer, there's a little bit of auctioneer trickery for you.
You know, it's interesting, because I heard you on a podcast say something like you're almost listening or knowing what they're thinking in their head, and you're trying to put something else into their head about a price. So they might be thinking, oh, I can bid another five. So how do you do that?
So when a buyer is trying to bid, they have like an inner voice that say it's $1,000. They're saying, we're only going to bid 1,000. I'm looking at the buyer and I'm saying, make it 10, make it 10,000. I can almost hear their voice saying in their head, no, I want to bid one. But I'm overpowering that voice because I'm allowed to speak and speak loudly. I'm saying, make it 10, make it 10,000. And I'm nodding. I'm saying, 10, 10, is it 10? Yes, it's 10, yes. So I'm convincing them and I'm overpowering their thoughts for them to give me the bid that I want.
We've been in auctions where we've seen that technique and it's like it just drives the energy and the momentum of the auction.
In the same breath, though, sometimes as an auctioneer, you can push too hard. And you need to know when you're starting to push too hard and you need to pull back and you need to give the buyers some wins sometimes. So sometimes a buyer might give me a win by giving me that 10, but another time, a bit of reverse psychology is I might say to the buyer, you know, I'd only bid 1,000. If I was you now, I'd just bid one, for example. And it can be a bit of reverse psychology where the buyer might actually then say five. Every situation is different. And it is all literally happening, you know, in split seconds, and we're making split second decisions. Sometimes you make the wrong decision.
Damien, can you see the person who is going to be the purchaser well ahead of the purchase happening?
Mitch, we can. One of the challenges is you're really only working with the buyers that have bid unless you know the people who are registered for the property. When we have somebody who comes in right at the end of the bidding, it's my role as the auctioneer to know that they're a registered bidder. So I'm looking for that person, even though they haven't bid yet. And people make telltale signs. And when they zero in on me, I know that something's about to happen. A telltale sign when someone is getting towards the end of their bidding to their limit, they'll be bidding and it might be a couple and they both look at each other. And when they look at each other, they're looking at each other saying, you know, should we go again? Shouldn't we go again? Now that yes. is a time when because I think one of the biggest mistakes that buyers make is they don't watch their competition. Because if I was a bidder and I saw my competition doing that, if the auctioneer convinced them to come back in, as soon as that person bid, that's when you need to pounce and bid strongly. It's the speed yeah. of the bid rather than the increment.
So I'm really interested that you say that, Damien, about people not looking at other bidders, because when we started with property, auctions scared me. But I remember Mitch bid for friends of ours. They said they didn't feel confident. Could he do the bidding? And Mitch, almost that same thing happened. There was a couple. And Mitch just came in with consistent bids. Like the minute somebody bid, he came back with a yep. counter, calmly, almost setting a pattern of I'm not giving up.
Damien, the other bidders were very slow coming back with their bids, and they were trying to push the bidding number down. Like they were trying to go up by 1,000.
Yep.
Every time I never looked at them. I just looked at the auctioneer every time they bid. I came back with 5,000. I knew what our buddy's budget yep. was. I came back with five every time. And then when I hit his limit, I turned to him and I said, you need to keep going. And he panicked and said yes. And I went again. But
it was so interesting you should say that behavioural stuff, because watching that, I still remember that, the other couple hesitated and they were talking to each other and weren't sure. And Mitch literally, at the side of his mouth, without moving his eyes, just went, yes or no. Now, decide now. And the guy went, yeah. yes, and he just went straight back to keep that kind of pressure on.
The other two were there. They gave yes. up. I felt like they thought, oh, this guy's going to yep. go forever. It was the last bid we yep. had in us.
Exactly. And
it was so much yes. fun. Oh.
That's what I love.
I wanted to ask you about kind of online auction, because the human behavior, you know, as an auctioneer, you're managing and reading human behavior in that group. And we've seen that. Obviously, we've seen that in auctions. We've seen you in action in many auctions and also in our auction, obviously, in 2019. Human communication is not just words. It's all that body language, but you don't get that. So I wanted to ask, how is it different?
Yeah, well, it's different in one key point for the buyers is that the buyers also can't see each other. So the thing I was speaking before about, you know, what's your competition in the online environment in Auction Now, the platform that we use by Realtair, that platform, the buyers can't see each other and I can't see the buyers, but the buyers can see me. The most, or the hardest thing, I should say, for the buyers at that point is that because they can't, I can't see them and they can't see each other, they don't know what the other buyers are thinking. So that little look at each other, if a couple are looking at each other, the buyers can't see that. And that's been a really interesting dynamic. So we've been seeing stronger results, larger increments, more active bidders, average number of registered, every single statistic in the auction market right now is up.
Wow.
Damon, can I just ask you then another question? Because, you know, looking at human behavior and how people operate in auctions, and I want to ask about Danny Wallace. Danny Wallace has been, one could call, an infamous bidder at block auctions.
Yep.
And block auctions, I think, are very different, very unique. But
they
he
are.
Does, and a lot of people don't understand. He does that weird kind of bidding where he bids for $4,233,000 or something. As an auctioneer, like, what is that all about?
I think it's about trying to bring them back from their momentum. Auctions are really driven by momentum. And funnily enough, a lot of auctioneers struggle with calling odd, weird numbers. I think that he's also trying to make his people that he's bidding against, so his competition, make them feel a bit awkward about the bid that he's bidding. Or it could just be that he's having a lot of fun and he just wants to bid a crazy number. I don't know. I think the strategy is flawed because at the end of the day, if someone wants to buy the property, they'll buy it. And really, the person with the biggest budget should be the buyer in the end. But I do believe if you have a similar budget, a better bidding strategy should beat, you know, somebody else who doesn't have a good bidding strategy.
As a real estate professional and as the leading auctioneer in the country, what's next for you? Where to from here?
I'm hoping Capri in 2022.
Oh.
You know, I'm very, very big on personal goals, business goals, life goals. For us, really, it is about looking at our kids at the age that they are now. So I've got three kids. They're 8, 10, and 12. For them, the important stage of their life now is getting through schooling and their education. It is all about, you know, being able, for me personally, to be able to provide an income that generates that income to be able to support our portfolio of property investments. The biggest goal, financial goals that I've always had is to make money while you sleep, and that's to be able to have investments that are making me money. So I always see my auctioneering job career as provides me with an income to do the things that I really want to do. But I always do come back to, you never know when your time's up. My mum passed away in January. She was only 66 years old. Dad's not well. And you really need to enjoy yourself. It's not all about money. It's not all about assets. It's not all about materialistic things, because none of that you can take with you when you go.
I'm glad and interested that you say it's not about money. It's about what's in here. And and you've done stuff with, like, I think,
We've raised well over $1 million for Youth Off the Streets. I'm an ambassador for Youth Off the Streets. I was on the development committee for Youth Off the Streets. But I do like unbelievable amount of charity auctions, and I donate a lot. I give a lot purely because I think that that really comes from a place of wanting to see others do well. I'm a big believer in what you give out, you know, comes back in spades. And there's a lot of people doing it a lot tougher than us. You know, we are incredibly fortunate to have the things that we have.
Damien, you're an incredible man, and you're listening to you now about what you've achieved and what you've given back. I'm sitting here feeling quite disappointed in Mark, quite frankly.
We've always asked when we get some get our guests, we ask them lots of questions. They share a lot about themselves. What is something you would like to ask us? Is there anything, not that we're that fascinating, Mitch is.
I think one question that I'd like to know from you guys is, where do you see your principal place of residence being, you know, in 10 years' time from today?
Damien, if you had have asked us that question before December 2019, we would have said our principal place of residence will always be in the city. We bought this place in Newport on a whim, but now we think we've made a big move to out of the city to Newport, which for us was big. But we love being in this beachside location, quite a pace, super friendly. So I could see it being here, but I wouldn't even rule out going further. Hard to say, but it won't be the city.
Yeah, I think it's changed our mind. And you mentioned earlier COVID and what's the impact of that has brought us back to lifestyle. And I think we will always want to be near the beach, somewhere more relaxed. I even think in 5 or 10 years' time, maybe spending more time when borders open. You know, we love going, we love up here, but we love also, say, the Greek islands. And I can see going there and just hanging out, doing nothing, just relaxed would be great.
Getting out of the city has changed us. Listening to you with your vision of just doing so much, in some ways getting out of the city has changed us in that we used to always want more. Now I think Mark and I, we just want enough.
We're lucky. And I think we're very lucky and we have enough.
But enough is our thing now.
I think that comes back to what I'm now starting to really learn is about being fulfilled. Rather than being goal-driven to meet targets and achieve this goal and do that, it becomes back to just being fulfilled and being happy and being content and happy with what you have.
I love the fact, Damien, you talk about happiness. It's about happiness.
And the joy that I bring, Mark, Damien, you've only got to look at the guy's face. Look how happy he is.
That's it. I'm really excited to travel.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I never had the travel bug in me until Pepe really put the bug in me. That's how I actually ended up convincing her to marry me. I had to fly over to Paris and fly her home from France and get her to come back to Sydney, because she actually went and moved and lived over in Paris for, I think, about 9 or 12 months.
Were you dating at the time she moved?
Yeah, we were. Yep.
She had to move away from you for you to bring
I obviously
that.
Wasn't a keeper.
So she moved to Paris. You were dating.
It was early days. We'd only been dating for, I don't know, maybe a month or so, a couple of months.
Oh. She just wasn't that into you.
That was my first time overseas.
Oh, that's romantic, though. First time overseas.
Yeah.
Was because she was there and you wanted to go and see her and bring her back.
In the Coolies, we lived a relatively sheltered life in the sense that, you know, I think the first time I ever went to a cafe, I was probably 18. And mum and dad did everything for us to give us a good education and sacrificed a lot. And mum and dad were very religious. You know, we grew up in the environment where, you know, materialistic things were not important. I think when I first started in real estate, you know, young guy, egotistical, you start making a bit of money, things come easily and you start buying all these assets and materialistic things and whatnot. And the older you get, the wiser you get, and it becomes less about that. And the older I get now, I hear things that mum and dad used to say to me all the time about just quality of life. My dad now, you know, he doesn't have his wife and he doesn't have this and he doesn't have that and he doesn't spend a lot of money, but he's still happy and he's still happy with himself. He doesn't need stuff to be happy.
So it's almost like that kind of message, that voice or that message from your parents is very strong about happiness, and that comes back in what you're doing now. You get grounded in that. It's an amazing gift to have, Damien.
Well, it is amazing, and I'm reminded by it. When mum passed, I'm one of five, and she wrote all of her children a birthday card to be opened up on your birthday. And my birthday was in June. Mum passed in January. So I was a bit nervous and apprehensive about opening up the birthday card. But when I opened it up, the message was, she said to me, she said, "I always knew that you were going to shine."
Oh, dang.
But don't forget what's important. I knew the message of what she was saying. Yeah.
What an amazing gift to have.
Yeah. So they're the things that are important.
Wow.
My uncle, who died over a period of only 8 weeks, he actually had that time. He accepted it was happening, and he just spent time with his five kids. Mm. And as a yep. nephew that was so fond, I spent time. And it's heartbreaking, but it's pretty amazing to have.
It's amazing. It's absolutely. It is amazing. Yeah.
So special to have. Damien, thank you so much. And thank you
pleasure.
For I admire you even more than I did before.
Thanks, Mark.
I'm on the fence.
Oh, we're a little bit off renovation topic.
With all the talk about moving to the country and watching your Bali and getting in touch with nature, all I'm picturing is Pepe with big bushy fucking armpits.
Mate, this is a little gated community down here. When you come through the front gates, you've got to take your clothes off and then up you come.
Oh my God. Oh my God. It's a whole another.
You'd see me on the block, I'm in.
Yeah, don't tempt him. Don't tempt him. Damien, thank you so much. And our love for Pepin too.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Thank you for giving us the time.
Absolute pleasure.
We were so close to getting through that chat without upsetting another guest. My goodness, Mark, I blame you totally. You made Damien cry.
I seem to have a skill at that, don't I?
But what a lovely and intelligent and driven man he is.
He is. You know, I always love spending time and talking to Damien, but that's it from us for this week. Christmas is around the corner, and Mitch, probably like a lot of our listeners, we have a lot of Christmas shopping to do. We haven't even started.
It's upon us. But Mark, we would also like our guests to please take a moment and review us. It really does help us get noticed out there. And I got to tell you, we love being noticed.
So thank you for listening to Reality Reno with Mitch and Mark, and join us again next week.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.